Hall Weekly is on the air.
Hi, this is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, Hub, our free agency preview.
How will the New Orleans Saints handle salary cap hell? Can the Buffalo Bills get to a Super Bowl with Fitzpatrick at quarterback? And could the Eagles be the surprise team in the RG3 Derby?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee, and we welcome you to a free agent preview edition of Pro Football Weekly. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly, and joining us in studio again this week is senior editor Eric Edholm. And we begin this week with associate editor Dan Parr. Dan, as of this taping, no deal between the Saints and their quarterback, Drew Brees. Will they have to franchise him, and if so, what will the subsequent salary cap ramifications be?
Well, it looks that way at this point. All indications are that there's still a significant distance between the two sides on a long-term deal, and I don't think the Saints want to get into a situation where Drew Brees hits the open market and other teams are able to come in and compete with them to get his services. So I think the tag will be put in play if by March 5th there is no agreement in place. If there is an agreement in place, it's going to be the richest deal in franchise history. It's going to make Drew Brees one of the highest paid players in the league. And the Saints are doing everything they can to give themselves more cap space to get something like that done. They've restructured defensive end Will Smith's deal. He currently is the owner of the richest deal in franchise history, but everyone expects that Drew Brees will soon have that title.
You know, Dan, I heard from one source pretty close to the situation that the holdup is that Brees doesn't just want to be one of the top-paid players in the NFL, that he wants to be the top-paid player in the NFL. That doesn't sound like Drew Brees to me. You wonder if it's representation getting involved here. And the reality is the Saints probably shouldn't make him the top-paid player in pro football. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Well, you are hearing that he could be asking for as much as $24 million a year, which would put him in that rare air. So it doesn't surprise me to hear something like that, because considering what he's been through, what that franchise has become, in large part because of what he's done on the field, this is a guy, and this is a league where players look to their salaries to figure out who's getting respect and who's not. And Drew Brees, while as much as he's a team-first guy, is very passionate about what he's done for that city and feels like it's time for him to be rewarded.
Well, and leverage is a wonderful thing, guys, and it's pretty clear who has the leverage in this negotiation.
Yeah, and that deal he did, guys. Now, come on, he was kind of forced to take less of a deal than a quarterback of his stature would have gotten when he left San Diego, right? Because people were concerned about his health.
Absolutely. He had had a severe shoulder injury, and other teams that expressed interest weren't willing to take as big of a risk as the Saints were willing to. Paid off for them. They have an issue now this offseason with Brees heading to become a free agent, and then Carl Nix, the best guard in the league, due to become a free agent, and Marcus Colson, their number one wide receiver, due to become a free agent. Most teams would kill to have this problem. They just have done a really good job of building this team, and now Mickey Loomis, the general manager, is facing a test that's more difficult than anyone he's faced before, and the clock is ticking for the Saints.
And sooner or later, you got to pay the piper. There's no question about that. Thanks very much, Dan. Associate editor Kevin Fishbane is with us. Buffalo Bills is part of his beat. And you got a chance to sit down with Chan Gailey last week and talk to him a little bit about Ryan Fitzpatrick. What did he say, Kevin?
Well, I asked him. I said, Chan, you know, quarterback and head coach are tied together more so now than maybe ever before. And you know, you got Belichick and Brady where it worked, and then Henny and Sperano where it didn't work. So he's familiar. And I asked him, are you confident that Ryan Fitzpatrick is the guy you're tied to? And he looked at me and said, we can get to a Super Bowl with Ryan Fitzpatrick. There's no question in my mind, showing that his confidence that he had in Fitz, even when everything fell apart at the end of last season, is very much still there. And Chan Gailey doesn't, you know, he's not so much like Rex Ryan where he'll butter someone up and sugarcoat things. He usually tells it like it is, so it shows how he feels about Fitz.
And we're going to ask you about Rex in just a minute, a guy who obviously said he not only could get to a Super Bowl, but also win the thing. But first, back to the Bills real quick. I mean, they've got a million needs. They could use a tackle, wide receiver. You know, they could use help at all three levels on the defense. And yet, even with Fitzpatrick, you got to think they've got to develop a young quarterback. What is the likelihood we see them take a QB in the first, say, three or four rounds?
Well, you know, Eric, I expected them to take one last year, and I think a lot of people were surprised when they had a lot of opportunities to take one of the mid-round quarterbacks, and they chose not to. This year, I think they're going to go in that direction. I know they say they have three quarterbacks because they count Brad Smith, but in reality, I think that they're going to, especially with a draft that's very deep at quarterback, because there's a lot of guys that you can take in that second or third round, it would work very well for the Bills. Bills to get a young guy to develop, because it's been a while since they've gone ahead and done that, and I think it's time to kind of take that chance.
Well, Kevin, another one of your stories this week involves the New York Jets, as Eric mentioned a moment ago, Rex Ryan. The story from the Combine was that Rex had some regrets over his Super Bowl promise of a year ago. Do we see real reform here with the coach of the Jets?
I did not buy it at all, Wayne. You know, when Rex went up there and said it, you could see all the scribes around there typing away, oh, Rex is a changed man. We have a new head coach. He's going to tone it down. I didn't buy it one bit, because what he was doing was he was taking the attention off his players and putting it all on himself, which is what he's done for years. I mean, he went as far as saying that his Super Bowl promise last year was part of the reason the Jets fell apart, because he put the expectations too high and he couldn't handle the locker room and everything just, you know, kind of unraveled. He still showed plenty of confidence in his team, made a comment saying, I always think we're going to win every time we go out there, showed plenty of confidence in Mark Sanchez going forward. So, you know, is he going to promise a Super Bowl again? No. But is he still the same Rex Ryan, still got that same kind of bravado that we've seen for over the years? I think so. And even going into our make-or-break year, I don't see a whole lot of change in his acts toward the media going forward.
And, you know, guys, I don't love Rex's act, but I got to tell you, he's not the problem with the New York Jets. Their franchise quarterback isn't very good. Their franchise wide receiver is a thug, one of their best defensive players, Bart Scott, they're trying to get rid of. They don't have enough pass rush. There's a lot more problems with the New York Jets than just Rex Ryan as the head coach.
Stay tuned. This free agency edition of Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And in studio with us this week, once again, is senior editor Eric Edholm. We continue with the way we hear it. And Eric, one of your prime beats, the Philadelphia Eagles. There's always news coming out of the Philadelphia Eagles, that a couple of very interesting names have popped up with the Eagles this week. Plaxico Burress and Robert Griffin III. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think the more exciting one, obviously, is RG3. And, you know, he just had that great 40 time at the Combine. People have looked at his tape more and are really excited by his potential. But you think Eagles, I mean, they've got Michael Vick. But there's a couple things to sort out here. Even though they gave Vick this big contract, he is up there in age. He's had problems staying in the lineup, staying healthy. Really, the Eagles can get out after next year without too much damage. That's the way they structure the contract. And Andy Reid's got to think about the future of the position. You talk about what these kids are worth now, the number two pick in the draft, you're not overpaying anymore. There's no more $45 million guaranteed or anything like that. They can go up there and get Robert Griffin, who, let's face it, is very much like Vic style-wise, could come super cheap, and in a year could be the starter. And heck, even if Vic gets hurt, you know, I mean, they've got a lot to play with. Two second-round picks, a first-rounder, DeSean Jackson, Asante Samuel. They're aggressive, and they may make a move in the situation.
Yeah, but the problem is Vic does them no good in the trade. The Rams want no part of him.
Right.
They made a mistake with the contract. I think everybody knows that. They're going to have to give up next year's number one to make this work as well. Players just don't have the value. Yeah, DeSean Jackson's a one. Asante Samuel's one. They can give him this year's one. But I think it's going to take at least this year's one, next year's one, both twos and both players to get RG3. That's a pretty hefty price.
Right, and we don't know if the Rams would want to take on Asante Samuel. What good does he really do then? Would he upgrade that secondary temporarily? Yeah, but I mean, he's 31. They probably want to send him somewhere else. So, you know, they may have to get a draft pick and then include that in. It's going to be a tough sell. There are other teams with higher draft value out there that could make a better play for them.
We're also joined by Associate Editor Eli Caberon. San Diego, your beat, Eli. The retirement of offensive guard Chris Dielman makes that offensive line an even greater need. And is it near certainty that they'll draft the linemen early come April?
It pretty much is, Wayne, because their offensive line is just a mess right now. Chris Dielman suffered a seizure after the Week 7 game against the Jets, and he never played again. And so that was a position that they thought he would return to, and now he's out. Guys like David DeCastro of Stanford, Cordy Glenn of Georgia are two targets that the Chargers have for that first-round pick, but they have so many other needs, especially a pass rusher, but so this offensive line thing is something that they're kind of worried about.
Chris Dielman, arguably my favorite NFL nickname of all time, Dirt.
Yeah.
You know, but Marcus McNeil is the piece of this, that they've pretty much given up on him medically as well, and that's two Pro Bowl offensive linemen you're trying to replace.
Yeah, and that's why they're going to be so aggressive in trying to re-sign Jared Gaither, who they picked up for the final five games of last season. Phillip Rivers was sacked 30 times last year, but he was only sacked five times total in the last seven games, so that line really improved as the year went along, and a lot of that credit was given to Gaither. So he's going to be a priority, and then drafting someone also early is going to be a big need for the Chargers.
Thanks very much, Eli. Cleveland Browns, normally the territory of Mike Wilkening, our senior editor. He is on assignment this week. And, Hub, they're trying to get a deal done with running back Peyton Hillis after all the baggage of last year?
Yeah, all the midseason stuff about him possibly not playing when he could have, protecting himself for his future, some veteran teammates not happy. He actually came back and played well the last few weeks of the season. He has changed agents. He's on his third agent now. Kennard McGuire has moved on. And both the Browns and Hillis have shown a willingness to work out a deal. Now, whether there's going to be the money that Hillis wants, that's unlikely. I think the other interesting part of this story is everybody assumes the Cleveland Browns are the team to make the deal for RG3. They're in the best position. There's no question about that. The fourth pick this year, another first-round pick this year, other things they can throw in. But Mike Holmgren has made it pretty clear, as has Heckert, they don't want to give up those draft choices. And, you know, they're not sold on Colt McCoy. They know they need a franchise quarterback. But don't assume that the Cleveland Browns are the team to make this deal, because they really value those two first-round picks.
And, Hub, let me ask you, doesn't Matt Flynn make sense for them based on the offense he's been in?
He'd be a perfect fit. There's no question that Mike Holmgren knows what to do with a guy out of Green Bay. And you know, listen, they're not going to be in the Peyton Manning Derby. There's no question about that. But, you know, if they stick it at four, or maybe with the second pick, a Kirk Cousins is there, a Ryan Tannehill is there. There's a whole bunch of things they can do, and so it's not a given, even though they've got the most ammunition, that they're the team to make the deal.
Associate editor Arthur Arkus joins us. The Indianapolis Colts, always news out of there, and everybody's waiting to see what happens with Peyton Manning. But wide receiver Pierre Garçon was given a fairly generous 5-year, $35 million contract offer from the Colts, and he's going to turn it down?
That's right, Wayne. He was made that offer last week and decided to decline. We expect the Colts to counteroffer. This often happens in the beginning of negotiations. Obviously, a player will look for a little bit better deal, and a team will be able to come back with a little bit better deal. But like you said, that one seemed pretty generous to begin with, and it's an interesting situation. We actually reported here during the regular season that Pierre could possibly move on, that he wasn't thrilled in Indianapolis. He could be looking perhaps for a warmer climate and a change of scenery. So it'll be interesting to see if the Colts can kind of knock his socks off with a counteroffer, or if this actually may be parting the ways.
You know, Arthur, it's funny. $35 million will buy you a lot of fireplaces and good heating systems. So I just don't see Pierre Garçon getting a better offer somewhere else.
All right. Coming up, we break down the offensive skill position free agents when Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to a free agency edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush, and again we're joined this week by senior editor Eric Edholm. Free agency begins in the NFL March 9th. The last day you can tag one of your players is Monday, March 5th. Peyton Manning's bonus day is March 8th. So with all of those dates in mind, guys, let's begin this look at the top free agents with the offensive skill positions and begin with the most important position on the field, and that is quarterback. The big question is, will Peyton Manning actually be on the market? Many people expect he will be. Where does Matt Flynn fit into this whole thing? And how about Drew Brees? No one can imagine the Saints aren't going to tag Drew Brees, but we just talked about it in our previous Way We Hear It segment, that if they do, there are major ramifications for the multitude of other talent they have on their roster.
You know, guys, there's no question that Brees isn't going to get to the market. I don't think there's any question that Peyton Manning is going to get to the market, but he's going to be limited to a couple teams who think they're ready to win right now, probably the Redskins and the Dolphins. And so, Eric, it really moves on to Matt Flynn. Once you get past Matt Flynn, you got Alex Smith, who's probably going to get franchised. You got Vince Young, Chad Henne. Who wants these guys? The only other interesting name to me, I happen to be a Jason Campbell fan, mm-hmm. and I think that's going to be the best value at the position in free agency.
Yeah, and I like Kyle Orton, too. I mean, I know people are down on him, especially the way he played before getting benched this year, and so I can understand the limitations that some of these guys have, and there are a lot of options, let's face it, between the draft and Manning and you know, Flynn is a kind of a wild card. We talked about Cleveland maybe being a good fit there. Obviously, Miami's coaches know him well. So, you know, there are a lot of moving pieces here. And one chip falls. Let's say Manning gets cut tomorrow. You know, he signs with somebody right away. That obviously affects both the draft and the other free agent moves. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. And you can see, like you said, only a couple teams in on Manning, but it's going to affect the rest of the field.
Yeah, and probably a guy like Matt Flynn sitting out there is not going to know his fate until Manning is decided, correct?
I would think so. I mean, and with Flynn, I mean, we have such a small sample size. We know the only of the two starts there. And Wayne, you got to see them both. Obviously played very well in charged up atmospheres against good teams. Those are great things to lean on. We've seen guys like Matt Schaub obviously have success with a small sample size behind him. But still, because of the options out there, I think Flynn's only got maybe two or three teams that really, truly make sense for him.
Let's take a look at running backs, Hub. You know, Arian Foster is the top-rated running back on the Pro Football Weekly Top 100 Free Agents. But, you know, the thing you got to wonder about there, can the Texans afford to tag him, and will they? Baltimore's Ray Rice is on this list. Chicago's Matt Forte. The Bears have already said they're not going to let Matt Forte go. So, you know, what's real here and what's not?
Well, Rice and Forte get tagged one way or another. Arian Foster won't because he's in his third year. He's restricted. They'll put a high tender offer on him. But I think most teams have figured out the folly of spending a king's ransom on running backs. So once you move past those three, Marshawn Lynch is interesting. I think the Seahawks are going to pay him, and they're going to pay him big based on the way he finished. And then you find some interesting value. Michael Bush is a kid that you got to take a look at. The Raiders have got big salary cap problems. I don't know how they managed to keep him. We talked about Peyton Hillis. Doesn't excite me that much. I'd pass on Cedric Benson. I'll tell you, a kid I love is Mike Tolbert, the San Diego Chargers. He's middle of the road, but you talk about productive, maybe not a franchise back, but a nice piece, and I don't know if the Chargers are going to focus on making him a priority.
Yeah, and one more name I'll throw in there, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Not sexy, not exciting, but a good system guy, and he's played well when asked. He's never fumbled. He's never lost a fumble in the NFL. Former undrafted guy, seems to be the prototypical Patriot. They're going to let him hit the market. There's no way. They're worried about Wes Welker. They're going to tag him, do all that stuff they need to. They could make a play for a defensive player. So the Patriots aren't going to overspend for a complimentary running back. This is somebody who could join a team and be pretty productive.
Guys, there's a glut of talent available at wide receiver, and this is going to absolutely affect everything. And there's some good wide receivers coming up in the draft as well. So tell me a little bit about this. Now, Pittsburgh's Mike Wallace is, you know, restricted. San Diego's Vincent Jackson. Philadelphia's DeSean Jackson, Kansas City's Dwayne Bowe are all Pro Bowl caliber receivers at the top of this list.
Well, they are, and then one more guy at the top to me is Marcus Colston. As a matter of fact, I'm not so sure. When you look at the whole package, including what he means in your locker room, that Colston wouldn't be my first choice, and I think he's going to move. I think the Saints, they've got to get Breeze done. If they tag him, it's that much more difficult. They've got to get Carl Nix done, and I don't think they want to lose Tracy Porter. And they got Robert Meacham, the other wide receiver. I don't think they want them both to move. They can probably keep Meacham more cost-effectively than they can Colston, but Meacham is a guy to keep an eye on. Now, you know, we talked about Pierre Garçon. He's good. I don't know if he's that good. Then you move on and you got to get well down the list, but you start to find some other. I mean, Early Doucette in Arizona, Harry Douglas in Atlanta, Eddie Royal in Denver. These are guys who've been on the fringe of showing up. I don't think they're guys that you mortgage the future for, but they become nice complementary second or third receivers.
Yeah, I think there's enough players in this draft where you can fit a one, a two, or a three, in this free agent class. And, you know, there's sort of a choice for everybody out there, and I think it's going to make for an interesting free agent class. And not everybody's going to get paid. That's the bottom line right there.
How about the tight end position? Fred Davis, Washington Redskins, John Carlson, Seattle, veteran tight ends. Is there value at this position?
I think Carson moves. I think he actually moves on. I wouldn't be shocked at that. I know they like the two tight end system, and Fred Davis could be franchised, so I think he stays.
Yeah, Vasan Shenko is a guy that I've liked a lot. Martellus Bennett, you know, these are guys who probably, depending on, John Carlson in Seattle is a player who I like a lot. They're not going to make a difference in your offense, but again, they can be nice complementary pieces.
Stay tuned. The offensive line is next on this free agency edition of Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larravee with Hub Arkish and senior editor Eric Edholm. The big people in the trenches in free agency. You probably can't build a football team with what's available in the trenches, but you certainly can supplement a line if you have a weakness here or there. However, you pretty much, if you're relying on free agency to build your offensive line of tackle, good luck, because there's not a whole lot here. Hub, you and I were talking, and Eric off the air. Offensive tackles, people just don't let qualified offensive tackles get to the market, do they?
Well, they're so hard to find, and never left tackles. That's what's really, I mean, you'll get a right tackle every once in a while, but to find a premier left tackle, you hang on to them. And you get a lot who are drafted high and bust out, but they become medical rejects. I mean, you look at a kid like Jason Smith with the Rams, who they're very disappointed in, but you got the third overall pick. You can't just let him go. They're trying to rehab him. Sometimes they move him inside the guard like the Bears did with Chris Williams, and there's just, you don't find tackles. I mean, I don't see anybody on this list that I would get excited about. You've got Gaither with the Chargers, who we talked about in the way we hear it, is almost certainly going to be re-signed, and we've got him as the 55th best player in free agency.
Yeah, I think you look at guys like Jared Gaither, Demetrius Bell from the Bills. These are high on the list because of the need at the position. People are always looking for left tackles, and yet Gaither, you know, the Chiefs have already given up on him. The Ravens have already given up on him, and the Ravens don't give up on players like that very often. They've been so good at these reclamation projects and stuff. Bell is 28 years old, so you think, okay, he's entering prime, but guy only has 31 games under his belt. And, you know, played well, but how good is he? Is he an anchor? Is he a guy you want to protect your franchise quarterback with? I don't know. So these are major questions, even though these guys are sure to get some attention on the market.
Evan Mathis of the Eagles. Eric, you mentioned to me you like him.
Yeah, I mean, he came from the Bengals, only played 12 games in 2010, wasn't a starter there, was kind of their sixth lineman, played a few different spots for them, and yet he came into Philly, and that line was such a mess to start the season. He was the one rock, and he got in the starting lineup and didn't leave, and they built around him, you know, and I think he was really an underrated player. I mean, I don't expect him to leave because I think they value him a lot, but he is a good player who could fit either a zone or a man scheme.
And the one other thing that will happen here is there will be cap casualties at the tackle position in the next week or so as teams line up for free agency. Remember, we talked about Marcus McNeil in San Diego. Now, the Chargers think he's a medical reject. I don't know if he thinks he's a medical reject. He's a former All-Pro. He would get some interest, and there'll be a few players like that. But again, nobody you can safely build your team around.
And Steve Hutchinson, too, for the Vikings. Big-name guys who maybe at the end of their careers are worth another year or two.
On the offensive line, the interior positions, let's go to the guard spot. Carl Nix, if he's available out of New Orleans, best guard in the game, maybe. Baltimore's Ben Grubbs made the Pro Bowl in 2011. There's some talent on the interior portion of the offensive line in free agency this year, isn't there?
Well, and Mickey Loomis, the GM of the Saints, is obviously a lot better at this than I am, or else I'd be the GM of the Saints. But, there appears to be no way with their salary cap issues that they can re-sign all three of Drew Brees, Marcus Colston, and Carl Nix. Now, in Jarry Evans, you've got the highest paid offensive guard in football. You just did that deal 2 years ago. Do you turn around and match it for Carl Nix, who another, you know, offensive lineman? Do you use the franchise? This is where Brees is killing them, because if they could get a deal done with Brees, they could franchise Nix, which wouldn't be terribly expensive at the guard position, and maybe get Colston done too. But if they have to use that tag, it's not just the quarterback tag, interestingly enough, is not the highest position salary. It's going to cost a lot less than a defensive end will, but it wreaks havoc on what else Loomis and the Saints can do. So Carl Nix could end up being out there in the market. The Ravens have said that they want to re-sign Ben Grubbs. And, you know, Eric, I have never seen so many quality centers on the market in my life. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously talk of Scott Wells maybe moving on in Green Bay, a fine player and a guy who was sort of the glue of that group up there. And, you know, Chris Myers in Houston, I think, finally started to get a little bit of a due this year. You know, he's somebody who I think can anchor a line. And Nick Harwick in San Diego, his value goes up because the Chargers need him so badly. They're getting rid of linemen left and right, and they need, you know, somebody to sort of tie this group together. So, yeah, centers used to be very, very hard to find. They were hard to find in the draft, and they're certainly hard to find in free agency. This might be one of those exceptions.
Yeah, and you know, guys, again, when we talk about the offensive line of free agency, it's quite obvious that the value that the personnel people value the tackles much more so than the interior line. I know that guards are starting to make a little more money in the last 10 years, but it seems to me like, boy, you're really worried about the outside of your offensive line, and you feel like you can mix and match on the interior, don't you?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Wayne. As we're talking, I'm trying to think back the last time an offensive lineman in his prime was a big mover in free agency, and I've got to go back to a couple guards. Steve Hutchinson and Alan Faneca.
Yep.
I mean, I can't think of any tackles who've gotten rich in free agency. Offensive linemen are at such a premium. They take a little longer to develop, and teams, just when they find a good one, they try not to let them move.
And Logan Mankins is a great example of a guy who the Patriots didn't want to budge on, realized his value, and decided we've got to keep this guy. We have to keep our line together.
All right, guys, coming up, we switch to the defensive side of free agency when Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this off-season edition of Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff of editors. This is Wayne Larrivee. Eric Edholm, our senior editor, joins us in studio. Free agent defenders available. And, guys, let's start with the defensive ends. I mean, that's kind of the glamour position of the line, obviously. Cliff Averill in Detroit does not want to be tagged by the Lions. Calais Campbell is apparently going to be available from Arizona, comes off an 8-sack season, 72 total tackles, his career high. Robert Mathis, an oldie but goodie in Indianapolis. John Abraham, even older in Atlanta, are both available in free agency.
Well, and interestingly enough, Wayne, and I suspect you were just teeing me up, is we start at the top with Mario Williams of the Houston Texans, who you know, when his status will settle the movement of all these other guys. And this is where, you know, people are asking themselves, why would the Texans even think about letting this guy hit the market? I talked about the difference between the tags at quarterback and defensive end. A franchise tag at defensive end is going to cost you almost $20 million. That is the reality of the deals that guys like Julius Peppers have signed. The Texans were $20 million over the cap at the end of the season last year. That part they can work out, but we just got done talking about two of their starting offensive linemen at center and guard. Arian Foster has to get paid at running back. It looks like Mario Williams is going to hit the market because of the abundance of the talent that they have on the defensive side. And depending on what Williams gets paid, that's what makes it so hard, Eric, for the Lions to decide on what to do with Cliff Averill.
Yeah, and I'll just make one quick point on Williams. I think they're going to regret this decision as one of the worst in franchise history, not getting a deal done with him last year. And you maybe look at a team like the Lions, and they were active in free agency the last couple of years, filling some holes. Obviously have a lot of top-heavy contracts, Matthew Stafford, Ndamukong Suh, top picks under the old CBA that made a lot of money, and it's going to hurt him with Averill. You know, he's made it very clear that he doesn't want to be franchised, so, you know, he just may have to suck it up and deal with it. I think that's the thing. While they try to work out a long-term contract, he's going to have to live with that tag, and maybe they have a handshake deal to not have him sign the tender as they try to work something out.
There's no question Mario Williams, the top player maybe in this entire free agency class outside of the quarterback Drew Brees, if he hits the market, but the thing about him I wonder about, is he a 4-3 defensive end or a 3-4 outside linebacker, or is he the rare bird that can do both?
Well, that's the interesting point, is it appears he can do both. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl defensive end, and he was on his way to a Pro Bowl as an outside rush linebacker in the first year they played 3-4 down there. He is coming off the torn pectoral muscle. Shouldn't be a problem with the right rehab, but it gets interesting in dollars and cents. He ain't going to get paid as much as a 3-4 rush backer as he would as a 4-3 end. It depends on which teams he's talking about. But you know, the Texans have got a real dilemma. They love the Reed kid. They love Connor Barwin. They got all kinds of pass rushers. I agree with Eric. When you get a player like this, to me, you don't let him move. You find a way to get the deal done. But the other thing that he's got working for him, or working against him, I suppose, a little bit, Calais Campbell of the Cardinals is probably not moving. But Robert Mathis probably is. There's no reason for the Colts to pay a 30-year-old pass rusher. John Abraham in Atlanta, 33 years old. I don't know that he gets a deal done there. Some of these other guys, because of their age, will move, and that's going to, you know, change the price. Mario Williams is going to be fascinating because I think the Texans need to sign him. I think other teams want him but may not want to overpay for him. Eric and I have talked about this. Keep an eye on the New England Patriots. This is a typical Bill Belichick move. It would be a perfect fit, and I got a sneaking suspicion that's where Williams ends up.
I think he's going to fit that team very well. I mean, they made a play for Julius Peppers, kind of a soft toss on him, and, you know, they got involved in some other players, and this might be the one where they jump in.
Let's go interior defensive line, defensive tackles, nose tackles. Who do you like in this group? I know from a straight tackle situation, Broderick Bunkley, Denver, former first-round pick of the Eagles is there. But the nose tackles get kind of interesting, don't they?
They do. You know, one other tackle, he's not a nose tackle, we didn't talk about. Red Bryant of the Seahawks has played both tackle and end, had a big year at end last year. He's a fourth-year unrestricted guy. The two pure nose tackles, if you will, Sione Puha of the Jets and Paul Scioli of the Dolphins are both a little bit older players, and that's going to hurt them a little bit. Scioli, I believe, went on a Mormon mission before he came to the NFL, so even though he's only a 6 or 7 year vet, he's in his early 30s. Those are two really good football players, good nose tackles, but age is going to cost them a little bit of money, and actually the Dolphins have even talked about putting a franchise tag on Scioli. I don't think they do, but that could still happen as well.
Yeah, another guy I'll throw out there who's a little bit older, has played well in the second half of his career, Antonio Gray, a guy who was a terrific talent at Boston College, had injuries, all kinds of problems, was way out of the league for a long time, came back in. He's 32 years old. He's still got some value. He's played pretty well in his last couple of years.
Outside linebackers high up on the list. Again, not a lot of talent or depth at this position because people who have outside linebackers that can rush the quarterback aren't going to let them get to the market. Anthony Spencer, however, Dallas Cowboys is on this list, and Aaron Maben, defensive end outside linebacker of the Jets.
You know, interestingly enough, Wayne, those are the names. There's no question about it. To me, Anthony Spencer has been a bit of a disappointment since the Cowboys drafted him in the first round to pair up with DeMarcus Ware. Now, maybe it's just that DeMarcus Ware is so good, but
yeah,
you would think that would open some things up for Spencer. He had his best year this year in his contract year. And Aaron Maben, I mean, how excited can you get about that? This is a guy who got cut in his second year after being a first-round pick in Buffalo.
Flashed a little bit of pass rush ability, did Maben, but other than being a situational guy, I don't see it. I think Spencer's the more all-around player. He can stop the run.
More free agent linebackers and defensive backs up next on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with our free agency edition of Pro Football Weekly along with Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, and senior editor Eric Edholm. This is Wayne Larrabee. Guys, let's continue on the defensive side of the football. The inside linebackers, London Fletcher's been playing this game for a long time. He's liable to be available from the Washington Redskins. Curtis Lofton of Atlanta. Stephen Tulloch, who made a big difference for the Lions. He was rock solid, signed a one-year deal with the Lions last year, went in there, started. They're not close to a new knee. He'll likely make the market, I would think.
I would think so. And, you know, you come back to London Fletcher. The guy still plays at a high level, but how much can you spend on a 71-year-old inside linebacker? I mean, he's been playing forever and ever, so he probably finds a way to stay put. Curtis Lofton, in many respects, is the key to this whole thing. The Falcons are determined. We'll talk about cornerbacks in a few minutes, but they got Brent Grimes that they want to get done. They probably don't get John Abraham done, or at least not unless it's at their price. They want Lofton, but there's only so far they can go for him. I think what really changed this market is DeQuell Jackson was the best on the market. He just signed earlier this week, and so he's a kid I like. And Eric, I know the Lions, a club that you watch a little more closely. I thought Stephen Tulloch was one of the big differences in that defense this year. He's going to be on the market as well.
They have a defensive front, a front four that likes to scream upfield and attack the quarterback. So what you need behind that is a very smart, disciplined, instinctual middle linebacker. That's what he is. He's not super athletic, but he lays the wood. He's a hard hitter. I think it's so important to have those guys that complement the rest of your defense. I'll throw another guy out there that I really like and I think is under the radar. If he can stay healthy, David Hawthorne of the Seahawks. Dude gets in there and gets 17 tackles. It's amazing how he can rack them up. 27 years old, same age as some of these guys. He might be a sleeper.
Yeah, I think the Hawks will probably try and keep him, and I thought you were going to go somewhere else. E.J. Henderson in Minnesota, extremely productive. Now, he is 32 years old. Believe it or not, E.J. Henderson's been in the league 9 years, and he had that devastating leg injury two years ago, but came back and played real well this year. He's the kind of guy who could get a short deal, 1 or 2 years with a Super Bowl contender. This guy's got, another guy's got New England Patriot written all over him, but he's never played in the 3-4. But don't be surprised if there's a market for him because he's super productive.
Great on first and second downs, yep.
Cornerbacks, you know, a lot of names here, guys. When you think about Tennessee's Cortland Finnegan, Kansas City's Brandon Carr, Brett Grimes from Atlanta, Carlos Rogers, San Francisco, Aaron Ross from the world champion Giants. There's some pretty pretty nice names at the top of the list.
Yeah, Eric, the guys that drive it to me are Carr and Grimes because they're a little bit younger, although Grimes for 4 years at 28 is not a spring chicken. Cortland Finnegan, I like a lot. He's actually only 28 years old. I would have thought after 6 years he was a little bit older. He doesn't have the speed these other guys have. He's more of an agitator and a zone cover guy, but he does play the corner position. He will lock up with a number one receiver and kind of take him out of his game mentally as much as physically. I don't think the Titans want to let him get away. I think Brandon Carr are those three, and those are the top three. He's the one that intrigues me the most, and I'm at a loss. I love Scott Pioli, but why you would sign Stanford Rout, which they did coming out of Oakland, and then let Carr get away? I guess only because Rout was a lot cheaper than Carr was going to be.
And Brandon Flowers cost him so much last year. You know, same thing we were talking about before, you know, loading up at one position, not wanting to overpay. This is a classic example of that. They gave Rout a deal that's probably about half of what Carr's going to get. I think the Dallas Cowboys are the team for him. I really think they're going to make a big play on him. They're not going to go offensive line like everybody thinks. So that's certainly a good fit. And we talked about the Lions. I know they obviously have to take care of their own people. I think he'd be a perfect fit for the line. I'm talking about Courtland Finnegan. I mean, just that angry hornet out at corner, you know, played for Schwartz in Tennessee, seems like the kind of guy they need more playmakers in the back end.
And Wayne, one other guy that I mentioned in the way we hear it, the Saints' Tracy Porter, remember, made the play, intercepted Brett Favre, got the Saints to a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Early in his career, they loved him. He struggled the last year and a half or so, but he's only a four-year player. He's unrestricted and almost certainly going to move because the Saints have only got so much money.
Yeah, and don't forget, he made a big interception in that Super Bowl for the Saints as well. Safeties, Deshaun Goldson, San Francisco, intercepted a career-high 6 passes. I thought the Niners were the best tackling defense I saw all season, and he was one of the best tackling safeties I saw.
Yeah, he's a terrific player. I thought he made some outstanding plays, especially in that game against the Saints. I mean, it was really that one misstep was going for the interception against Jimmy Graham. Other than that, their discipline in that game was so good. And you're right about the tackling, such an underrated thing. And Goldson really came into his own this last year, Vic Fangio's defense. I thought was a huge thing. One other name that's a huge name, LaRon Landry, but the Achilles injury is what's really going to hurt him. I think he comes back to Washington for a 1-year, 2-year kind of deal just because they – both player and team sort of have to settle for less a little bit.
Yeah, for any of our listeners who have access to Google, Google LaRon Landry. Just look at a couple of the pictures.
Photos. I mean, oh, yeah.
I wouldn't touch that guy with a 10-foot pole. How he can run in that body is a mystery to me. His arms are bigger than my head, and I got a big head. You know, so
he looked like a D lineman.
I'll tell you what, guys, this position, other than wide receiver, may be as good at the top as you're going to find. I like Michael Griffin a lot. We mentioned Deshaun Goldson. You know, and there's other players can step right in and play. Tyvon Branch of the Raiders is interesting. And again, a little bit under the radar, if you go, you got Reggie Nelson of the Bengals who led them in tackles, and Michael DeCoud of the Falcons. There is some real talent at the safety position.
All right, guys, that wraps up our preview of free agency as we get set in this NFL offseason for the free agency period. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, there was a time when the NFL had no hot stove league, no real off season. We'd have this desolate month and a half or two in the desert waiting for the NFL college draft. But free agency has been great. I love free agency. You do. Our listeners do. It's a lot of fun. But, guys, I got to warn you. Name me a Super Bowl team since the Packers of the mid-90s that have gotten there on big money free agent signings. How'd you like what happened to the Philadelphia Eagles last year? There's a cautionary tale for you. Go out and spend $150 million or so and see where it gets you. Yes, free agency is important, but look at the teams that have been successful with it. The New England Patriots, they plow the middle of free agency, the veterans with a year or two left, the less expensive players that are just coming into their prime. The Niners did a nice job of it last year. But teams that go out and make a big splash and spend a fortune in free agency almost never get the wins commensurate with the dollars that they're spending. It's fun for us, but your favorite team better be careful.
Thanks very much, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. Now for Hub Arkush, Eric Edholm, and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on a special edition of Pro Football Weekly.